Money FM 89.3, best of weekends.
This is a topic that is hugely interesting, important, and timely in Singapore. Just yesterday, a wild boar that is believed to have been the cause of several attacks up in the north part of the island in Punggol, this boar was caught and euthanized. And it is bringing, as we have been talking about on the show, Neil, for many months, this this juxtaposition between the city growing and nature being reduced.
Yep.
And where are the animals going to go?
Yep.
And they're coming in more close contact. We see this with snakes, with monkeys, with the boars, with everything. Joining us now, Sean Lum, the senior lecturer at NTU Asian School of Environment, president of the Nature Society here in Singapore, and Kalavaivan Balakrishnan, the deputy chief executive of ACRES. Gentlemen, good morning. Welcome to Weekend Mornings. We're so happy to have you with us today.
Good morning, Glenn.
Good morning, guys.
Good morning, guys. Good to see you. So let's put into a bit of a context. Kalai, maybe you can, you're on the ground with ACRES. Maybe you can give us a bit of a, set the scene for us. What's happened in the last week or so?
Yeah, so I guess that was a wild boar that was sighted in urban residential areas. Apparently, it was it had attacked a few people, including a lady. And then I think there was a manhunt for the boar by 20 or so people. So I believe yesterday the boar was caught and euthanized. Mm. So that is a summary of what has happened in the last 1 week.
Mm. Yeah. And on that point, as I've mentioned on this show before, unless there's several, it's possible. I believe I've seen that boar. I've recorded video evidence of it. I showed it to yourself in exactly the same areas of Punggol. I contacted Dr. Andy Ung and so on. And
I know it's big. It's about 40 kg, right?
Yeah.
It's not a small animal.
Yeah. And it's been in the, if it's that one or more than one, it's been in that area for some time around Punggol near the waterway. Anyone listening will know the Waterway Shopping Mall. It's a short walk away from there. It's between there and leads towards Sungai Serangoon and Coney Island. So this is the area where the boar or boars have been spotted quite a bit recently. I mean, Sean Lum, you're also president of the Nature Society, I believe. Why do you think we are seeing an increase in boar sightings in the last few months?
Yeah, good question, Neil. I think even like Kalai and I would like to know this a bit more. But I mean, I think it's a combination of a few things. First of all, I think maybe we have more people just walking outdoors, maybe in response to having been all these restrictions because of COVID. So there are more of us. So that's the likelihood of these encounters increase. But there's a second thing. I think wild boar populations have just been on the increase over the past 10 years. I mean, if you can consider that 30 years ago, the first comprehensive survey of mammals on the Singapore island found no wild boar. And today, you know, just a generation later, they're ubiquitous. Mm. So I think those populations are going up. And the third thing, and I think Kalai could confirm this, but there's a lot of these projects where areas that became secondary forests are now being cleared for development. You can think of Mandai, Tenga, you know, a lot of these. And these animals perhaps are being displaced. And so it's a combination. The populations are going up. The animals are being squeezed into fewer and fewer pockets of greenery. And the third thing is more of us are out there. So I think that's a kind of a tricky combination.
Sean, I don't know if you know the answer to this, but just a quick follow-up, as I'm sure many of our listeners are thinking the same thing. How can we increase the boar population at a time when deforestation is obviously increasing and our urban population is growing? Surely less forest means fewer boars. Why would our boar population be increasing in the last 30 years or so?
Right. These animals, again, the habitat was there, but they were absent, presumably because of hunting, you know, in the 1900s, early 2000, you know. And so, but they've come back. They probably swam over from Pulau Ubin or Malaysia. These amazing animals, they've been known to even cross the English Channel, you know. Mm. So they can move, and they found habitat. Old rubber plantations and oil palm provide lots of food for them. They've reproduced, and they've done they've prospered. And now, though, some of those areas where they found refuge are coming due for construction. So that, again, that's a not a good mix, not a good mix.
Yeah. We're speaking with Sean Lum, the senior lecturer at NTU, and also the president of the Nature Society of Singapore, and Kalai Balakrishnan, deputy chief executive of ACRES. If you're not familiar with the with that, it's the Animal Concerns Research and Education Society. And Kalai, over to you. When you look at what happened yesterday, there was apparently they NParks had set up cameras and they had a spotting from a resident noted that they saw this particular boar, wild boar, hiding in the vegetation. They called, everybody came out, you know, and then they trapped it eventually and shot it. They all say that they believe this is the animal that was responsible. First of all, from your perspective, can we really know that for sure when there are quite a lot of wild boars out there? And secondly, the handling and the euthanizing of this animal, do you think that was the right answer versus just taking the animal off to a more remote location and letting it go?
I think firstly, we need to realize that there are many boars in the whole Punggol region. In the past decade, there have been so much development there that Punggol and Pasir Ris are all along the coastline. So these boars have nowhere else to go.
Yeah.
So as you clear down the forest, they are coming back out. The feeding of the boars are happening so often that they're getting used to people and coming out. Now, to answer your question, whenever we are faced with a boar in a public situation, it's tricky. Even when you're going to dart it or even when you're going to use a blowpipe, the moment the pipe or the tranquilizer hits the boar, it's going to react in a way that it's going to charge or run around. Mm. So it's always very tricky. And I can understand NParks' situation in this, given the public situation. Whether there's a need to euthanize the animal, I think it's important that we always fight that the obviously, we want to relocate the animal. And that is something that even ACRES has been fighting for a long time. You know, why are we euthanizing the animals when they can be relocated? I'm not sure at the end of the day, this boar, was it sick or did it have any injuries that caused it to behave in such an aggressive manner? That I don't have the details to. But I guess the moment they darted the boar, maybe it showed signs of stress and injuries. A lot of times, these wild boars, even for us, when we rescue them, when we dart them, they sometimes don't survive the whole ordeal. They do get sedated, but sometimes they don't wake up. So there are a lot of things to consider. And yeah, I do understand NParks' situation at this point. But moving forward, I think this is a very reactive thing that we have done. I think all this can be avoided or reduced if from, you know, years back we start planning, you know, if we know we're going to clear land so indiscriminately, there are boars in there, there are other wild animals there, what's going to happen to them? If you look at snakes, we can easily relocate snakes, but what about larger animals like boars? Mm. I think a lot of planning has to be done way in advance. And this is not just an NParks problem. So I think, you know, whenever these things happen, everybody's looking to NParks for answers. All the agencies need to be involved because as we move to a city in the nature, all agencies need to be involved in how we can better deal with wildlife problems.
Sean, from a nature point of view, is that a viable option? Is it even feasible and possible to move wholesale? They're not small animals, wild boars, from an area that's about to be developed to an area that isn't. Is it even possible? I don't know.
Well, they can be moved, and the question is, will they stay where they're moved? And I agree completely with Kalai. Now, there was a study done by some NUS biologists not too long ago that showed essentially the wild boar across Singapore are one vast population. They move around. There doesn't seem to be any suggestion that boar in one part of the island are isolated from another. So these are extreme. I mean, in one way, you think about it, these are amazing adaptive animals, resilient, and you know, they kind of live up to their. There's probably a reason why they are one of the signs of the Chinese zodiac, you know, for example, for their qualities. You know, but Kalai again is completely right. We need to really look and plan what is a sustainable boar population, given that there is no sort of natural control for them. They move, they will go onto roads, they can move into populated areas. So there are some studies ongoing to also try to understand what are the impacts of wild boar. So if you go in the weeks ahead, go into the forest, you'll see these fenced enclosures. These are meant to look at what are the impacts of wild boar in places where they're excluded versus where they're running around, just to see again what is a appropriate population size of wild boar. And then, as Kalai and I would suggest, this brings another set of problems. They reproduce. They come out and feed. What do we do if we decide to cap a population at a certain level?
Mm.
And, you know, some people would say, well, you cull them through some sort of humane, you know, euthanizing them. Others might say maybe they can be sterilized. But again, these will lead to very difficult but necessary conversations. I don't know if you agree, Kalai.
Yeah, I do agree. But I think sterilization of the boars have been discussed before. I think there are a lot of, it will be a very big operation, let alone a very expensive one. But we are pushing for it. That is one humane way to go about. But we need to also consider how effective it will be in the long term.
Yeah, we're speaking with Kalai Balakrishnan, Deputy Chief Executive of the of ACRES, Animal Concerns Research and Education Society, and Sean Lum, Senior Lecturer at NTU, President of the Nature Society. And Sean, you said something interesting in your comment just a moment ago, you know, about the research phase of this and looking at this. But to be honest, I mean, this problem has been around for years now. And, you know, what is actually being done about coming up with a sensible policy? We've talked on this show many times about the need for government and for private industry, you know, private concerns that want to develop real estate projects, for example, the need to house Singaporeans. We all get that there are certain needs. But when are we actually going to finally come up with a solution, a plan, a percentage of how much land we need that's wild, et cetera, you know? It seems like everyone's always studying it, but nobody's really coming up with any answers.
You know, that's such a good point. I suspect we'll come up with better approaches soon, because in the past, for example, wildlife issues were split across two agencies. One was the national parks. So but the moment wild boar, say, walks out of a nature reserve or a park into the sort of bigger urban matrix, it was no longer their business, and it became the, you know, ABA, the vets over ABA. They have been consolidated now into a wildlife unit, and I think we can look forward to a more holistic approach to solving this issue. But you are right. I mean, the first time the controlling the wild boar population, it, because of fears that the population would go rise uncontrolled, that I think there was some debate about 9 years ago, 2012.
Yeah.
And then it went kind of quiet, you know, as Kalai could also attest, it went quiet until maybe last year it started again picking up. And in those years, we lost an opportunity to really try to nip this problem before it got out of hand. But it's better late than never, you know, and so you're absolutely right. Let's go forward, come up with a good plan, but also at the same time, we should respect these animals. They're amazing. You know, they range from North Africa to the British Isles, all the way up to Siberia, across the Sunda Islands. They have such a wide range. They're found in every imaginable habitat, except deserts, maybe. And they're part of this folklore, Greek mythology, Celtic mythology, everything. And they're a bit Asia, you know. So I think part of the solution is planning, but also part of the solution is how then do we learn to live with these animals in a more appropriate way, one that doesn't endanger the animals and doesn't endanger people as much as currently is happening. Yeah.
You're both right about the multi-agency approach. Yeah. I remember someone famously telling me that if a tree falls, right, you know where this is going. If it falls,
does it make a sound? Are you going to go there?
No. If a tree falls along one of the park connectors, for example, if it falls left onto the land, it's M Parks. Yeah. If it falls into the river, it becomes PUB. If it falls somewhere else, it
into
can be
the road. It's LTA.
LTA. Right. And so you can have like, it's just a tree, guys. Get rid of it. You know. So I completely understand where the guys are coming from on that one.
Yeah.
Okay, a little bit more controversial now. I've seen a response that, shall we say, is not uncommon to an issue like this. Now, I think NParks, as Kalai alluded to there, has had a bit of a thankless task this week. And they've been out there doing a fantastic job, working 24/7, Glenn. They've had teams following and tracking and trying. Yeah. You know, people are being bitten. It's a serious thing. Yeah. You know, they want to do right by nature, but they've got to do right by the people as well.
Of course.
So I'm completely on side with that. But what has happened subsequently, it's in all of the newspapers today, after the boar was euthanized, something that I knew was going to happen, which is this. Don't feed the animals.
Yeah.
Overfeeding is causing the problem. I don't want to get too political, but there's a blame shift. Suddenly the blame is moved to the people. It's the people's fault for feeding them. It's not the fact that the forest was chopped down overnight. It's the fact that someone left out a couple of plates of food and that's caused all these problems. Now, I'm not saying for a second that feeding animals is not an issue. We say it over again, don't do it, don't do it, don't do it. But on a broader level, Sean, on a broader level, is it really too simplistic to say leaving out a little bit of food is going to cause all of this? Or do we need to be brutally honest and say, if we're going to develop this fast, we have to accept the consequences?
Certainly. Kalai earlier said that it's not a straightforward solution. It requires many agencies and really you and I and everyone else. It's our collective. Well, it's partly a problem, and it's also kind of a wonderful thing if you think also that there's wildlife in this very densely populated place. It's incredible. But how do we make it so that it everybody buys into it, including and it's safe for everyone or safer for everyone. And so this is, you're right, Neil. We can't say that it's due to just one thing, people feeding the animals. That's part of the issue, but it's more, it's how do we plan our physical spaces? How do we anticipate what's going to happen when we clear areas? We can't just shepherd them and expect the boar just going to be happily, squeezed into a small little area. So I think it needs to really be a holistic issue. And also, people feeding the wild boar, maybe it's not very good, and it can be leads to problems down the road, but there is a sympathy for these animals. It's just how can we take that good will and maybe express it in a different way. So I think feeding in a way is a sign that people care.
Correct.
Right.
But maybe it's a misplaced sort of care. Let's rather than castigate people, can we rechannel that?
Exactly right.
Yeah. Kalai, this past Thursday, I was doing my morning walk at McRitchie Reservoir, which I often do, and I was surprised to see the number of people that were carrying walking sticks or some sort of a stick with them. And as I was walking along, somebody coming the opposite direction said, I saw a wild boar up the path, a small one, but it's up there. From Acre's perspective, how do we as hikers, walkers, joggers, whatever, how do we protect ourselves? What should we actually do aside from not carry bags of food? We know that. But if we are just walking along minding our own business and one of these animals comes towards us, what should we do?
I think first of all, if you're walking with a walking stick and a wild boar approaches you, please do not use the walking stick. You're going to be in a lot of trouble.
But that's the first instinct, right? That's the first instinct that people are going to want to do is push it away.
They do it with monkeys as well.
Poke it, right? Yeah.
Yeah, but I think in this situation, if you are entering a nature reserve, what you want to do is avoid all the situations altogether. So you don't have to bring a walking stick, but I see a lot of people bringing plastic bags of food, for snacks for themselves. I think just a few days ago, there were some photos of people actually leaving behind dog food along the trails, the nature reserve. We need to avoid all this. I think we have said earlier, it's a multi-agency effort, and this includes the community as well. People need to be more responsible in how they behave around these animals. And, don't bring in food. Some of these animals who have been fed by people will be used to people carrying food and they'll start approaching you. Mm. If you're in the nature reserve and you see a boar crossing a path, let it pass. I think now, especially during this pandemic, a lot more people are entering nature reserve because they want to be close to nature, but sometimes they're getting too close, they're getting too excited. They want a good photo for their Instagram and all that, but we need to learn to give the animals a lot of space, whether you have seen a crocodile in Sungai Buloh or whether it's a wild boar or a macaque, give them some space to move on. Small measures like don't bring in food. And, if you want to bring a walking stick for your own safety, you can, but try not to use it, because if you're going to try to use the stick to, ward off a boar or a monkey, it may actually make the whole situation worse.
So what do we do? So, Kalai, what do we do? Back off, back up slowly while looking at them. Don't look at them. I know with the monkeys, you're not supposed to look at them sometimes, or sometimes you are. Like, I'm always confused on what I'm actually supposed to do when I run into these animals.
I think for macaques, try not to look them in the eye, especially if it's the alpha male. Don't bare your teeth. Mm. That is a mistake a lot of people do when they see a monkey. Oh, it's so funny. They start laughing at it, but that's a challenge to them. So back away. If it's a wild boar crossing a path, just let it pass. Do not approach it. Always look out for wild animals who may have babies with them. They'll be more extra protective. This is across the board, from otters all the way to boars and macaques. So try to be vigilant for these things. You are entering their home, so we need to give them as much space as possible. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've got a few points coming in from our mutual friend, N. Siva Soti, who follows on from my point saying, don't just shift blame to pull factors, feeding. There are strong push factors too. Land clearance, absolutely. A biodiversity baseline study needs to be conducted for all green areas and not just at sites near nature reserves. I couldn't agree with Siva Soti more. So I wanted to ask you, Sean, you have done wonderful work, truly wonderful work. And I encourage everybody, get online, get to Facebook, go to the Nature Society pages, bookmark them, follow them. They do wonderful work. I'm going to ask a controversial question to finish. As we develop so quickly,
thank you.
I'm going to ask you, Sean, because you're the expert on this, is a city in nature even possible? Or at least, is it possible at the speed we are moving towards it?
It's possible, Neil, but also I think we need to be fairly realistic about this. You know, we can create the habitats and they can be filled by animals. I mean, the wild boar are certainly an example, the otters. But again, we need to acknowledge that not everybody's comfortable, for example, with a city in nature. So some of it is, it's not just creating the habitat, you know, build and they will come. But also, does everybody buy into this?
Yeah.
And if we just assume that it's a good thing to everyone, we're going to see more of these incidents. So I think, and I think we've got two issues. Maybe one group of us have I won't call it irrational, but maybe an excessive fear of wild things, insects, lizards. And maybe there's another group of us that see them as really cute. Maybe these we've kind of Disneyfied. This is wild animals, and they should be respected, and we should love them, but realize that they're wild. They had their own space, and we need to respect that. And so I think that outreach, it needs to keep pace with the development of the city in nature so that we don't end up with a kind of a backlash against nature because, wait a minute, you know, we weren't – you didn't ask us if we wanted animals in our – and so I think – so we need to change – from the inside, not just changing the city physically.
Yeah.
And if we can manage both, I think it's going to be much better for wildlife and certainly enrich our lives as well.
Thanks, Sean. Gentlemen, we have to leave it there. Just one last comment from Al Un, who's one of our Facebook Live watchers. He says, stop tearing down forests to build nature walks, which I think is kind of an interesting point as well. That's a whole other topic on how we use our natural resources. But we do have to leave it there. Sean Lum, senior lecturer at NTU and also the president of the Nature Society, and Kalai Balakrishnan, deputy chief executive of ACRES, Animal Concerns Research and Education Society. We are so thankful to have you both on today. Really hope we can have you on again in the future as well to further discuss these issues.
A pleasure and a privilege, Glenn and Neil. Thank you. And Kalai, so good to see you, man.
Hey, good to see you, Dr. Lam, and thank you, Glenn and Neil, for the opportunity.
Wonderful stuff.
Thanks, gentlemen.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SBH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.